ultra running is, well, I joke, it's cheaper than therapy.
And the Mid-State Mile's no joke, y'all.
Doesn't mean you're fine. He was like, fine, it's just average.
Quasi scared to be social. We still needed that socialization.
Hi, welcome back to Port Washington Public Library on Long Island in New York with my friend and my coach, Steve Panzik. He's the owner and founder of Power 10 Fitness, which started in 2006. And he has just taken his journey next level. It's so inspiring that I've been hunting him down for a few weeks, begging him to record an episode of Winged and Ready with me. So I'm very excited to have Steve here. Steve, can you just take a minute or two and introduce yourself and your origin story and why we're sitting here?
Well, thank you so much for having me on this, Diane. And I'm sorry that it took so long to haul me in, not because I didn't want to be here.
Because you were running hundreds of miles.
Yes, definitely been trying to do my best Forrest Gump impersonation lately. So, as you said, Power 10 Fitness, we actually opened in 2005. Before that, we were Powerhouse Pilates in 2001. We're having our 20th anniversary for Power 10. I'm a physical therapist by trade, certified strength and conditioning specialist, and have kind of taken a journey to where I started as a rehab and fitness center, and we've kind of developed more into a fitness and post-rehab center, as well as a sports-specific training. Over the years, have expanded from 5 to 10,000 feet, and have been very fortunate to be in the community of Port Washington with the people that have come into our lives at the gym.
Yeah.
It's been a nothing but positive experience over the last 20 years.
No, it's an incredible, incredible community. We say P10 fam for a reason. You really do feel like family there, and you can be of literally any fitness level. To all the listeners out there, I think you've probably gathered by now, I'm a middle-aged woman. I can concretely tell you that Steve has gotten me and my family through a lot. I'm going to choke up even saying it, but got us through COVID. That was such a genius move. He set up an outdoor gym with, like, literally putting together, like, 2x4s to hold gym equipment so we could still get together in the parking lot. Then he expanded next door into what used to be a gymnastics center and took that over, made a huge turf, which is incredible. And more importantly, I mean, thank God for Steve, you got me through menopause, which was a big one. It was a big one. Yeah.
No, I've heard that from others too. And funny, as we talk about the run, one thing that we'll talk about is my wife gives me a hard time because I ran myself into menopause as one of my post-run ailments that kind of hit me, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So Steve is a amazing husband, amazing father, amazing community member, incredible entrepreneur. I've had the pleasure of watching his business grow since 2011 when I became a member. I've watched him coach rowing teams for the high school kids. I've watched him get his own children into young adult mode with great success and become a hugely important part in the Manhasset community. I think you're part of their, you're on the board for the town, correct?
I was on the school board,
for
the past 3 years. I was president of the school board the past two, and with my kids being out of the system, it was time for me to kind of move on and let the next generation take. So we came in during a time of maybe unease, right after the COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And all the school issues, and was really able to put a sense of calm back into the school system and make sure everything was in the right direction, and able to turn the handles over to that next generation that has the young kids and the fiery passion that's required to be on that school board with children in the system. So that passed, and now I'm just a father, a husband, entrepreneur with the gym, and really try to be the best community member I can, whether it's Port Washington or Manhasset, because both are near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, and fundraiser.
And where, always give back where you can.
Yeah. So just when I thought he couldn't eke another thing into his schedule, because you're up at the crack of dawn every day, you're at the gym bright and early, then. He used to skedaddle post-gym and go coach kids. But somehow in there, you've decided to become an ultra runner.
Yes. So a couple of years ago, my older son was curious about running a marathon. So I've done a couple of marathons. I've done an Ironman. So we did the New York City together and came out of that. And someone sent me a movie on Prime called One More Mile. And it's about a last man standing ultra down in Tennessee. And I watched that. It's about an hour and a half. You can still get it on Prime. And you saw the people that were associated with this ultra and the community that was surrounded in this ultra. And it was it just really drew me in. It was supportive. It was encouraging. It was competitive. You know, they wanted to beat the person next to them, but they wanted to make sure that person got as far as they could. Yeah. There wasn't. And I went down there that year and competed and was just taken in and enthralled by all of it and have kind of like haven't looked back and have continued down that path.
Yeah, that's so cool. You told me about that movie. I think it took me all of a week to go watch it with my family. And the Mid-State Mile is no joke, y'all. And you can't just go down to Tennessee and run it. You have to apply to
yes.
be accepted.
Yeah, first it opens up on January 1, the applications. It's in someone's backyard, so they only allow 110 people. It is a 1.1-mile loop. It has just under 400 feet elevation in that 1.1 mile. That's about a 30 to 40% grade going up and going down. It's laid out as you have 20 minutes to complete that loop, and whatever time you come back inside that 20 minutes is your rest time. Then on the 20 minute, the next loop starts. And it starts every 20 minutes until there's one person left. Every 12 hours, there is a 20-minute break. So, and the races go for 30-plus hours.
That's insane.
For the winners.
That's so insane and inspiring. And it's hot and humid. Tennessee is a hot, humid place.
June, Tennessee is unforgiving. It was 98 degrees 1 year, and then last year we had torrential floods and rains as we were running. So we were actually running through creek beds that had now become 6-inch deep creek beds through it. So it was different variables that you have to deal with, like in life, different curveballs get thrown at you, and you just gotta buckle down and deal with it.
So you dealt with it. You did it your first year. I think as an observer, it was, I want to say, a wake up call for you to get to know yourself a little bit better in a way that you never knew you could. Is that fair?
It was very humbling. Went down there with very high expectations and trained what I thought was tremendous for it, and I ended up in the top 30, but again, only lasted 10 hours and was
only 10 hours,
which it was the furthest I've ever run, but it was very humbling, to where I took a step back. And I was like, I needed to give this another shot and kind of refocused myself over the next year to get back down there again this past year.
Yeah.
And that was, again, it's something that nature, that competitiveness, the people that are there, it's an awesome community.
And you really started to hone in on pushing yourself, not only physically, but from a nutritional standpoint, too.
Yeah, I revamped everything. I got an ultra coach to help me kind of put together, because it was a new realm to me as much
yeah.
as it's kind of the smartest person, you know what you know and you know what you don't know. And trying to find someone who is more of an expertise in this ultra world and
right.
and help me build out a training plan. One of the first things was I always consider myself fit and in shape, but you know, getting the leaner I am, the less pounding. I'm not a light runner. I'm a heavy runner. I'm sitting at 230. Now I'm down at 205, and it makes a big difference on your joints pounding
yeah.
it. So I changed. I got very serious about the. About the nutrition, cut out the drinking, and really just made that my focus for that time, and ended up last year going down there and finished in the top 10, which was rewarding. And I thought that that was enough, and that I gave it all, and like, hey, the young guys ahead of me are the young guys, and this was good. I can put this one to bed. And then I woke up the next morning, thought I would be completely debilitated, and I felt fine. You know, this past year I lasted 22 hours, did about 21,000 feet of elevation, and when I woke up fine the next morning, I realized there was more physically in me, and I mentally quit when I thought I physically quit.
Wow.
And that's the amazing thing of this race. It is a mental, you're finding new mental, physical limits for yourself that you really try to push your, like, what is your extreme and how far can you stay mentally focused? So I am going back this year. You know, I left something on the table, and I gotta go find it.
Amazing. I love that. And you also kicked it into a different gear because you decided to do some impressive runs here in New York. I vicariously loved. The listeners don't know, but I had a full knee replacement almost a year ago. And going into that, I had wanted to run 50 for 50. I just turned 51 yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But I didn't get to do it, but I got to enjoy it through somebody else.
Yeah, that was a fun run. Woke up that morning, took off at 6 o'clock, and I kind of like mapped out on Google Maps a loop that started on Long Island, and we took off down Northern Boulevard. I had a buddy for the first 10 miles, which was a nice way to start the day, through Flushing, past City Field. And then we went over to LaGuardia. That's where he turned back. And then from LaGuardia to Randall's Island, Randall's Island to the Bronx to Yankee Stadium. From Yankee Stadium into Harlem, cruised all the way down through Central Park till we got to Brooklyn. Brooklyn across the Brooklyn Bridge, which is so iconic. And then kind of making the way back through Maspeth, Corona, until you hit City Field again. And then you rerun that last 6 miles along Northern Boulevard. And it was really cool to see. I mean, we hit every borough but Staten Island. I apologize. You know, we'll have to wait for the 60th, and we'll loop into Staten Island. But it really was neat just to see the people, the atmosphere. The Yankees won the night before. Oh. The Mets didn't. So it was very different atmospheres around the stadiums. It was an enjoyable day out there.
That's, and you probably feel more bonded with the New York City area than you ever have before after doing that.
Yeah, it was, there's no words for it. Like, it really was just a great run, great scene. Like, I rarely listen to music. I kind of turned the music off until like the last 5 miles down Northern, because that's probably the most boring of the stretch. Because you just take it in the sights and scenes. You're listening to the city. The traffic going over the bridges, Randall's Island, you know, people out there playing baseball or soccer that early in the morning. Like, it was neat. The guys at stands outside Yankee Stadium cleaning off from the night before victory, where, you know, everyone's gone home and they're getting ready for the next game and cleaning everything out. Like, it was the day after 9/11. It was September 12th. So there was definitely some heaviness going to the Brooklyn Bridge, seeing the Statue of Liberty. I kind of see Brooklyn Bridge as that's America's bridge. That's the history behind that. So there's a lot of other deeper things that were going on in that run too.
That's amazing. Have you had any? I mean, you're going to have a ton of time to contemplate and think, and I'm sure it's also probably a very spiritual time. How has it impacted, do you think, if at all, how has it impacted you as a business owner, entrepreneur, coach?
I think, you know, ultra running is, well, I joke, it's cheaper than therapy. It gives you a lot of time with your thoughts. You know, you go through, you become very, you have to find different things to toss in your head that either motivate you or have meaning to you. And, you know, I get to think about the business as an entrepreneur, and it gives me time to kind of play out different scenarios and really play out different scenarios. I'm out there running for 8 hours. As a dad, as a husband, you know, I think a lot about family, whether there's little things that we're trying to solve as a family that comes about every day having kids, or just thinking about the good things that kind of push you through moments on the run that things aren't going according to plan. So as a coach, I think about certain issue I may be having with clients, and how I could work through them differently and work with different people differently and work out plans. Like, you get a lot of time to yourself.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a meditation.
Meditative,
you know, it's my therapy. When I run, typically I run early in the morning before work. So the streets are empty. I typically don't run with music. So again, I can kind of think about my day, set my day up. Anything that I went to bed with that was kind of holding on me, that I can kind of get up with a fresh head and attack it in the morning on my run. Like, running is very therapeutic.
Yeah, it's such a, and your body chemistry changes too. So it even enhances that meditative state that you're going into.
Absolutely. Yeah, you definitely have, trying to have a positive turn on things, and it, and trying to have the best outlook and really get to something that you can solve, a solution to it.
Yeah. I used to say it was taking time. I used to tell people it was my church, but also the change curve, which is a lot like going through the emotions of grief as well. When I was doing long runs, I used to find like I almost went through that arc of a curve, that same emotional change, until you get to the other side.
No, it absolutely, there are many phases to a run, and they come and go at a moment's notice. They're curveballs that come. I think no matter how much you plan out a run, whether it's a 3 mile run or a 30 mile run, you kind of go into it with the headspace of a plan. And I think, you know, as Mike Tyson has that famous quote, is you got to plan until, you know, get punched in the face.
Right.
And during a run, you can take a lot of punches that just, you know, this doesn't feel right, this feels right, or this is going, and you got to adjust.
Yeah. And, I mean, you went through a lot of changes before you became an ultra runner, too. I want to rewind the clock a little bit and go back to COVID. I mean, your pivot as a business owner during COVID was not only inspirational and helpful to the community, but it was really impressive how you didn't just sit on your druthers and say, oh, this is too bad, we're being shut down. What gave you the courage and mindset to do what you did?
Failure not an option. You know, like, it was a very scary time being closed down for 5 months, and in New York not really having they weren't planning or giving us a very clear path for gyms. Mm-hmm. At that time. So trying to pay attention to neighboring states as to what some of the rules they were doing and be proactive about that. And then when we saw a little bit of sliver, like, looked online, learning how to build a squat rack out of 4x4s and 2x4s, as you said, and we built a bunch of those outside and bought 10x10 tents, so everyone had their own lift station, and we were open sunrise to sunset once we were allowed to gather outside, and carrying the equipment we could out there and carrying it in at the end of the day. And it was about survival, you know, like, to sit there and take the money the government was handing out and do nothing didn't seem right, to be able to produce something. And I know for people, as much as we were quasi scared to be social, we still needed that socialization. So trying to find a way to bridge that gap for those that were comfortable with it.
Right.
And and then the opportunity came to open the other side, and it was, I remember sitting down with my wife Shaz, and it was, do we double down and do we expand in the middle of, we don't know when we're going to open, we don't know if what this long-term play is at this point, or do we close? And we took the bet that, you know, people are going to want to come back to a gym, this is something that we can build in this community, we're going to double down, we're going to expand while we're closed over this 5 months, and take the risk. And the community has been responded just overwhelming with support, and it was the right decision 20 times over. And I'm truly grateful for,
yeah,
just the support we had from people all over.
It had to be a scary decision.
Very scary. It was, you know, if you're closing, then are we selling the house and moving somewhere else and starting,
right,
something anew, or are we, like, there's, and at that point the kids were all in, I think they were 8th, 9th, 10th grade, my kids at that time. So there's still a lot of growing up to do, and
yeah,
and just trying to put it all together. But I think the biggest motivator is family, and that, you know, failure wasn't an option, and we're going to find a way to make it work, and we're going to find a way to come back even better with,
right,
it, because we didn't want to be in this position again.
And that's awesome that you did it as a cohesive unit. That's amazing that you have a partner that you can sit down and do that with. A lot of people out there are trying to do some scary things by themselves. I'm like, you don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, no. I married above my pay grade. I was very smart.
Well done, yeah.
Smartest thing I ever did. And I'm very thankful for my wife and just the partnership and the insight and being able to throw, you know, as a thought partner off of different ideas, and to know that when push comes to shove, that, you know, biggest fan, biggest supporter, and we're gonna get it done.
Yeah.
You know, that's huge.
That's beautiful. And it's a power, too, of not only partnership, but I love highlighting that from a cognitive basis, we all make decisions differently. So if you're not talking it out with somebody else, you know, you're going to miss a nuance, or you're going to miss a spark, or you're going to, you know, miss whatever that potential secret sauce could be in the plan going forward.
No, 100%. You know, you surround yourself with, you know, smart people, and everyone comes with a little bit different lens, a little bit different background, and sometimes it could be the most obvious thing that you just don't see until someone else points it out to you.
Right. And I know you do that for a lot of people with their physical health and trying to keep us treading and keeping our heads above water as we face our own challenges in life. So thank you for that. The expansion was incredible. Your journey's been incredible. What we've not touched on, though, was your most recent run and your inspiration for doing it. So kind of saving the best for last. Everybody who listens to Winged and Ready knows that I have a philanthropic leaning, and I love talking about charities and giving back to the community. So you've taken your new position in life as an ultra runner and a coach and a community member, and you kind of packaged it up into one powerful punch to do something pretty impressive.
Yeah, about a year ago, and that's a very kind lead-in. Thank you. About a year ago, I pointed out to my wife that it'd be kind of cool to run the length of Long Island. And she said, yeah, that'd be kind of cool, but you're nuts, which is usually the reaction when I throw, like, some of these ultra runs out. And then, you know, a few more months passed, and I kept looking at it, and I started plotting it out just to see what would this entail. And in my training, I was kind of, after I did the mid-state and came away feeling really good about my level, and I had doing some maintenance, and I had a couple runs in this fall that I wanted to do with the 50 miler, and I went out to Colorado Springs and, you know, raced to the top of Pikes Peak, and I was like, you know what, this would be a good time. And she's like, well, if you're gonna do it, you should add value to it. And over the last 2 years working on, as a president on the school board, I got to work with Manhasset Great Neck EOC, and it's just a impressive organization, a group of people that are there doing so much for the community that sometimes gets overlooked in Manhasset. It's off Community Drive over in Spinney Hill, and the building was the African American school during segregation. And after segregation, the building was given to the town and then sold to the community for a dollar. And it's central to the community there, to where there is tutors, after school programs, summer camps, food pantry, daycare. It's a real anchor and support system for families in that community. Mm-hmm. And learning more of what they did over the last 2 years, and they lost some funding, and I thought there was a way that we could help bridge that gap and help them with some of the programs that they're trying to work on a daily level.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you decided to raise money for them by running the length of?
Running the length of the island. And and it started with the length of Long Island, like point to point, Montauk to, I guess it'd be, you know, the Queensboro Bridge. And then my head started thinking, I'm like, Manhattan, Montauk to Manhattan just has more of a, rolls off the tongue better.
Yeah, you're
almost M&Ms. I was like, if you're going that far, you might as well run across the bridge and the extra mile and a half and get to Times Square and, like, end it. So we made it to Montauk to Manhattan. I will tell you, somewhere around 50 miles into the race, I was like, this was horrible marketing. I should have done Montauk to Manhasset, and I could have been done at 107. And I laughed in the middle of the night when my wife was dropping off my second half food. I'm like, we really missed on this one. I could have been done in Manhasset. And I was like, instead, there's another 20 miles after that. But it was really a neat feather in the cap. We raised over $18,000 for the organization. The community really pitched in. So thank you to anyone who's listening who donated. Like, it was awesome. And they, and I told them when we started, I don't know what this will bring. You know, maybe we can bring $3,000, $5,000. They just lost $18,000 in a grant the year before. So the fact that we were able to fill that entire aspect, it'll go directly to programming for them, was just absolutely awesome.
That's incredible.
Really, really awesome. And the run was, the run was an experience. 124.26. You know, and it was, and the perfect. I talked about the 50 earlier and how what a wonderful and enjoyable run this was, and I tell people it's kind of like you can any day you go for a run. Those who people who run 5 days or 3 days, you can go out for a run and feel as light as can be. And it's just flowing, and then you could go out 2 days later, and just it's not
blocks.
A running day.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or reason, sleep, something, and I could tell about 3 miles into this run that it was going to be a grind.
Oh no!
And I had a little self conversation with the head, like, okay, like this is going to be a mental run. Like the physically, I knew I had the physical ability to do it, but it wasn't feeling it. And it didn't want to do it, then I was like, okay, the mind's just going to have to take over on this and be ready for the battle that's going to come for the next 24 hours because it's going to be a battle. And it was a grind. It was an awesome grind. It was awesome to push through those and reach those moments. But it was
a lot of
self-talk back and forth, especially doing it solo and you're out there just with your own thoughts in the middle of the night going through Riverhead. It's 40 degrees out and you're running along the median of the shoulder of the road, and it's just you and a couple cars and the farmland, and
it was like crickets literally.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you know, I was like, gotta, and you gotta finish, you know, you gotta finish, and that's part of it. Like, you can't quit. Part of it is the example you're trying to set for your kids, you know, like your family. Like I said, this was the goal and this is what we're going to do. And, you know, anything that comes up in life every day, you can always find a reason to quit. It is so easy to find a reason to quit anything that you're doing, whether
yes.
A lift, a run, a paper, like you can find a distraction and you can justify it. And we're so good at justifying why I quit. And then people will pat you on the back and be like, oh, yeah,
that's
you're right.
Okay.
That isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry. You tried. And I didn't want that to be the message to where if I stopped at mile 50 or 62 or something, oh, well, you got halfway, or, you know, or, you know, stopping in Manhasset and being like, okay, well, you got to Manhasset. That's pretty, you ran over 100 miles. That's pretty good. But, you know, you put a goal out there, you're like, you're going to finish it. And it may not be as fast as you want, and there may be a grind, but there's a goal you're going to finish. And I think that's important for the next generation to see and
right.
understand. And there's a lot of variables, and there was a lot of punches in the face that came during that, that I had to deal with physically and mentally. But you just find a way. And on the flip side, I made a promise to this organization that I was going to do this run for these kids, and we were going to raise this money. And I wanted to come through on that and not fall short of running it. They could be, oh, well, you know, we got the money, Steve, it's okay. No. I said I was going to run this and we're going to raise this money.
Right.
Like, I want them to know that those kids that are going there, that someone's willing, I'm willing to put myself in a physical position that it's going to benefit them,
right.
You know, and it was a grind.
That's beautiful. But they literally can see it. They can see that somebody's literally out there busting their butts, slogging through it for them. That's pretty beautiful.
Busting the button a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was mile 63 to 80 was the most enjoyable, where everything kind of came together. I was dealing with a lot of cramping in my calf and hamstring right from the beginning. I couldn't find the right electrolyte balance, not to bore people, and you know, taking salt packets from 7-Eleven and pouring it underneath my tongue, trying to get salt directly into to level out. So
wow.
63 to 80 was the smoothest of it. 80 to 100 wasn't bad, dealing with the different gastro with all the food that you're trying to eat on it.
Right.
You're eating 400 calories an hour, trying to get 1,000 milligrams of salt, 90 grams of carbs, and fuel the body, and carrying all that on you. So you're carrying 10 to 15 pounds on you. At mile 100.
You did look like a camel with your sack.
When I saw pictures of me, I'm like, that does not print well. That is not cover material. So when I hit mile 100, there was something really cool about that is at mile 100 happened to be on Northern Boulevard, right past LIU. There's this Roses nursery that has the old gas pump right in front of it. And you're never really sure if it's open, not open, if it's still a work. But when my dad was around, that was one of our favorite nurseries to go to.
Aww.
And we used to buy, you know, roses there from there. And, you know, my dad passed, going on 6 years. So when I came up and I'm like, wow, I hit 100 miles. This is the first time I've hit 100 miles. And I was like, and I looked up and I'm like, I'm in front of this nursery, which was really cool.
That's really amazing.
Feeling a little tired and a little goosebump. And then I turn around and Chef Chris, he goes by, he's an ultra runner on the island. And I met him just Instagram DMing. And he said something to me that, I'll catch up with you at some point during the run. And I hadn't seen him till that point. So I just kind of thought he forgot about it. And I turned around kind of feeling a little like run down, like I still got another marathon to go. And here he is kind of like, my dad sending someone, like, he's like, hey, I'm here to run with you.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, wow. I was like, all right. And he did 3 miles with me. It was the most enjoyable 3 miles to have someone to talk. And then he took off for some other things. But it was, it was really, really neat to have that moment, that feeling where it happened. And then all of a sudden there was someone there to help me. So, there's a lot of
spiritual things,
a lot of deeper meanings out there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Did you ever think when you finished your first New York City marathon, you're like probably very proud of done 26.2 miles. Did you ever think you'd say, I just did 124.26 miles?
No, I would say my first marathon was Philly, and then I did New York, then I did Philly again, and I threw an Ironman in the middle of that. And as we learn as we go, my nutrition and my fueling was so bad. I was under, now that I, you know what I know now, that I would deal with pretty severe leg cramping at mile 19, 20, like locking up and not sure what was going on at that time because I'm hydrating and not realizing my electrolytes were just so diminished.
Right.
And I've never had like a beautiful, nice, enjoyable marathon. I'd kind of like to go back to it. In the upcoming year and give it a shot and see how fast I can go with the training. But, I never would have imagined of running further than that. Like my long run training for a marathon was 20 miles and I thought that was
a lot.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And now I find myself like on the weekends, for me to go do 25 to 30 miles is on
normal
repetitive Saturdays is like, it's okay. Long run on a Saturday, let's go do 25 miles. I'll run into the city, pick a different bridge, run over that bridge, go to Penn Station, take the train home. So I've hit almost every bridge into the city. Just end up at Penn Station and train at home. You always get a seat by yourself. I guarantee that.
So if you're in Penn Station, you can look out for Steve on a Saturday, getting on a train all sweaty.
Find a seat to yourself and get a ride home.
Look for the P10 logo.
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right, you said you ran yourself into menopause. I got to know what that means.
I would say to go the last 13 miles of that run was real pain. Like, not like, okay, I'm tired, it's discomfort. It's like, okay, is there a stress fracture? Am I tearing a meniscus? Like, it was step after step of we're now causing some type of damage. And I've never run to that point before. Like, I've run to tired. I've run to where I thought I was done, like in the mid-states. But I've never run to, like, pain. And my legs from the thighs down were, like, one straight line of just swelling. So the post was I would do 2 10-minute ice baths a day, Normatec sleeves. I got an IV one day. Someone recommended, and that was phenomenal. Right here in Port, Boost IV was awesome. But the first night, I go to sleep, and I am up every hour. And the legs are uncomfortable, so it's already a little bit uncomfortable sleep. They're hurting. Every hour on the hour, waking up and just a full-on body sweat. Like, not a little, but, like, full-on sweats where I'm like, what is going on? And so that was 6 or 7 times night one. And I wake up and tell you, oh, we got to wash the sheets. I have no idea what's going on with my body, and I'm running very hot. That lasted for 4 days.
Wow.
And there was, like, a ketone pneumonia smell to the sweat, too, which was weird. And so looked it up, and it was basically, there was so much muscular damage and internal that your body's repairing itself. So it's running hot because internally it's
mad
fixing
it.
And it's fixing, and it's sweating out all the ketones and pneumonia byproducts of your muscles until it gets you back to homeostasis. And this was
incredible.
It was 4 nights of just full on. And that's when, after like second night, Shaz turned to me, she goes, you ran yourself into menopause. I was like, how long is this going to last? Mine lasted 4 days. So I got out easy.
Yeah.
I realized that. But it was, I think that was the biggest surprise at the end. I expected to be sore. I expected the legs to hurt and to kind of have the shuffle of moving along.
Right.
It took about, and it, in 3 days, I'd say I was at 50% recovered. Wow. And about 6 days, I was at like 70% recovered. And a week later, I was able to run again at like 90%, you know, with it. I still have maybe a little bit of tenderness at one Achilles, but nothing that's debilitative.
Right.
At this point, just healing.
And you did get up. Was it the next day you went and greeted your running club in the morning?
Yes. I had missed the run club over the last month. We meet on Saturdays because of traveling to see my kids at their colleges and sporting events. So I had to be at that run club. So I got up with my sweaty, poor sleep and made my way over there enough to shuffle out of the car. And we meet at the farmer's market at the Port Washington Town Dock, which is a phenomenal farmer's market. And greeted them, shared little stories, and I sent them on their run. I thought I would try to walk with the walking group, and I couldn't keep up with the walking group. So I turned around, went to the farmer's market. At that point, you know, we calculated on the, you know, I was like, I burned over 16,500 calories during the run. So I went back to refuel those, and I got a chocolate croissant, a chocolate baguette, and a cinnamon croissant. And I parked myself on the bench like the old school cross country coaches. And I sat there, and I was like, I will wait for them to come back. And I enjoyed my treats.
That's
and
awesome.
And then they helped me get up after when they were done. And went to work. I had a couple clients at work.
That's awesome. In closing out, if you had one piece of advice to give the listeners or anything you would want to share that we've not touched on.
Challenge yourself. You know, like I think from the expansion at Power 10 to physically challenging, I had a client once asked me how I'm doing, and I said, I'm fine. He goes, well, what does that mean? What does it mean you're fine? He was like, fine's just average. You know, so and I've really taken that to heart to where I'm like, okay, fine's just keeping your head above water. That's just normal living. Like, do hard shit. Challenge yourself. Like, whether it's taking that risk at work, whether it's taking that risk at a personal level, you know, whether it's taking that next step and challenge on a fitness level. Like, you know, don't be fine.
No.
You know, challenge yourself. Go for it. And and when you go for it, you go all in. You go with all your heart. You can't, any of the stuff that is worth accomplishing, you can't do it with half a heart. You gotta be all in.
I love that. Get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable. Get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, is what one of the coaches used to say. Like, you just, everyone wants to be like, oh, you're stressing me out. This is, you know, like, you know, this isn't comfortable. There's too many variables. Like, that's life. Life's throwing you variables on every single level, personal, business level. Like, get comfortable with it and take care of them. You know, don't run from them.
Yep. Stormy weather, hoist the sails, go.
Yeah, 100%.
I love it. Thank you so much for this conversation. I had a blast.
Oh, Diane, thank you so much. I really, truly appreciate you having me on here. It's an honor.
I really love this. Yeah, I did too. Thank you.
Right, thank you.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.